Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is JNDI Naming Configuration and Problem Determination. My name is David Long, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2, the agenda. In today's session, we will start off by introducing our panel of experts to you. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to JNDI naming, configuration, and problem determination. Next, our panel of experts will answer any pre-submitted questions as well as the ones that they provided. Then we will open the lines for live question and answer period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of today's session. Moving on to slide number 3. At this time, I would like our panel of experts to introduce themselves for today's call. First, we have David Tyler. Please go ahead, David.
Hi, my name is David Tyler. I have been supporting WebSphere Application Server for 12 years, specializing in several components, including JNDI naming and related technologies such as database connection pooling, transactions, EJBs, and web services. And I'm also a certified WebSphere Application Server administrator.
Thank you, David. Next, we have Krishna Jaladi. Please go ahead, Krishna.
Hi, my name is Krishna Jaladi. I've been with IBM Application Server Support for 11 years. Some of the expertise include SDK skills. I'm an expert in HA Manager, and then JNDI, JPA, and web services related applications. That's it.
Thank you, Krishna. Next, we have Tuan Nguyen. Please go ahead, Tuan.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tuan Nguyen, and I've been with WebSphere Application Server Level 2 Support for the past 8 years, supporting various components such as JNDI naming, workload management, web services, connections, among others. I am also certified in WebSphere Application Server version 8. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Tuan. Next, we have Randall Anders. Please go ahead, Randall.
Good morning. My name is Randall Anders, and I've been with IBM for about 13 years and with the Level 2 Support Organization for about 7. My expertise ranges in not only with database connections and high availability, JNDI, web services security, but also application deployment and systems management and WS admin scripting and admin console issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Randall. And finally, we have Al Gilchrist. Please go ahead, Al.
Yes, sir. Thank you. This is Al Gilchrist, and I've been with the WebSphere support team for 10 years. And I am an IBM certified system administrator for version 8 and below. I have had specialties in Enterprise Java Beans, workload management, CORBA, Java persistence architecture, and Java JNDI. So that's what I do. Thanks, David.
Thank you, Al.
Yes, sir.
Before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number 4, please go ahead, Al.
Yes, sir. Thank you. In the introduction, we will be covering a number of questions that cover various Java naming directory interface topics, such as name not found exceptions, common troubleshooting steps, direct and indirect JNDI lookups, EJB3, JNDI lookup issues, and persistent namespace issues. Covering the WebSphere application server, these cover version 7, 8, and 8.5 for the distributed portion of the application server. Please go to slide 5, please. WebSphere application server provides a naming server and JNDI implementation to allow access to resources, enterprise like Enterprise Java Beans, data sources and connection factories, Java mail providers, and etc. Objects are bound in the JNDI namespace when JVM starts or when the application binds objects and are stored in the hierarchical structure within a context. application obtains initial context and performs J&DI lookup to access source can be done with JVM or remotely. Dave, I'm through, bud.
Thank you, Al.
Sir.
We will now begin our question and answer session with questions that were provided by the panel. I will now hand the presentation over our panel of experts by moving on to question number one on slide number six. Please go ahead, David Tyler.
Thanks, David. So the first question is, what are some of the common reasons why I might get a name not found exception when looking up a data source? And this is actually the most common problem that we see related to JNDI naming. We're going to focus on a data source, but that's probably the most common kind of resource that we see with JNDI lookups. But the same things will apply for connection factories, Java mail providers, and even EJB JNDI lookups. So if you can go to slide seven. All right, so the first thing that we want to check, if you get a name not found exception, that basically means that the JNDI name that the application is performing a lookup on cannot be found in the JNDI namespace of the application server. So we want to make sure that the JNDI name being looked up matches what we have on the application server. So the first thing that I suggest is looking in the systemout.log and finding the WSVR0049i messages. For most application servers, if you have a lot of resources created, you'll see a long series of those. So you want to find the one that matches the data source that you're looking up. In this example, the JNDI name is JDBC/MyDB2DS. You'll notice it says binding MyDB2DS as JDBC/MyDB2DS. The first name that you see there is actually the administrative name of the data source, and the second one is the JNDI name. It's important that you look up the JNDI name and not the administrative name. So if they don't match, make sure that it's the JNDI name. And then from the stack trace of the application source code, you should be able to find the class and the line number in the application code that's doing the lookup. So, for example, you'll see something like what we have listed here. Make sure that name matches what you see in the WSVR0049i. The second thing to check is make sure that the JNDI lookup is done on the correct JVM. As Al talked about, the JNDI lookup can be done either locally in the same JVM or remotely. So if it's a remote JNDI lookup, what you need to do is set the provider URL on the initial context prior to doing the JNDI lookup. So by default, the provider URL will be set to the server name and the bootstrap port number for the JVM on which you're doing the lookup. If you want to look up a remote resource, you need to set the provider URL as seen in the code example here, and make sure that it has the correct host name and the bootstrap port number. You can get that bootstrap port number in several ways. The easiest would be in the systemout.log for the application server that you want to do the JNDI lookup on. And it's important that you do specify the application bootstrap or the application server bootstrap port number here, and not the bootstrap port of the node agent or any other process. The third thing to know about is if you are doing a lookup on a remote JVM, you must use the fully qualified JNDI name. So that includes cell/nodes, and then it includes the node name and the server name. And that's exactly as it will appear in the dump namespace output. And we're going to talk about that dump namespace output actually in the next question, so we'll go into more detail on that. If you go to slide number eight, a couple of other things. The data source might not be bound to the namespace due to an error during the binding. So look for the WSVR0049i, and if you see an error binding that particular data source, it could be something like the JDBC driver classes not being found, then that could be the reason for the problem. The next thing is check the scope of the data source. So data sources and other resources can be created at the cell, node, cluster, server, or even application scope. And it needs to be defined at a scope that is visible to the application that's doing the lookup. So, for example, you might have the data source defined, but on a different, but at the server scope for a different application server. And so on this application server, the JNDI lookup fails because it doesn't have access to that data source. You also want to make sure it's not defined for a different node or a different cluster. Those are some of the common mistakes that get made. The next thing is the resource reference might not be defined for the data source. So what you'll find if that's the problem is the name not found exception will show that the name comp/env/jdbc cannot be found in context Java colon. So that means that an indirect JNDI lookup is done, but a resource reference is not defined. And we're actually going to talk more about that in question 3, which talks about the difference between direct and indirect JNDI lookups. And finally, if you've gone through all of these other possibilities and they don't apply, it could be the data source might just not have been defined at all, or there could be a typo in the JNDI name that is being looked up. So those are all of the things that typically can cause name not found exceptions. Turn it back over to you, David Long, to introduce the next question.
Thank you, David. Question 2 is, this is Randall Anders, and the second question is, what are the common troubleshooting steps that I can take to resolve a JNDI lookup problem? And to understand why you may be having an issue, you want to view and take a dump of the namespace. You can use the dump namespace tool to dump the contents of a namespace accessed through a name server. When you run the dump namespace tool, the naming service must be active. You have to make sure that the server is running. It's basically used to generate a dump of everything that's there in that server namespace. It only includes bindings that are local to that particular server process. So you're not going to get things for all the other servers, just for that server's local process. The tool simply traverses through the namespace recursively through the JNDI context, in particular the list bindings operation. Slide number 10, please, Dave. One of the things we want to talk about, and they'll get into more on the next questions when we look at direct versus indirect, you have to kind of do a mapping to make sure that things are lined up okay. And one of the first things when you run dump namespace, you want to ask yourself, can you see the object in the namespace? If the answer is yes, then some things you want to do is check for spelling mistakes on the lookup code versus what you actually see in the namespace. You want to confirm whether or not you're connecting to the namespace of the proper server by checking what's listed in the provider URL. If the provider URL or the context lookup values are picked up from a JNDI properties file, and you may want to go in and print out the variables to system out to confirm that the correct values are actually provided. If you don't see the proper object in the namespace, then you can use the admin console to verify that the server hosting the target resource is actually started and running. You can also verify that the web module or the EJB container is hosting the target resource is running. Another thing you can do is verify in the admin console that the JNDI name of the target resource is correct and updated. And if the problem resource is remote, that's not running on the same node as the name server, then you can verify that the JNDI name is fully qualified, as Dave mentioned before, including the host name. And this is especially applicable to network deployment configurations. So if we're doing a direct lookup, we basically want to do a mapping of these three items that we show on the screen, which is the parameters that we're passing to the dump namespace tool, the provider URL in the actual code that's doing the lookup, the JNDI name of the data source that's being looked up, with what we actually see in the dump namespace output. Slide 11, please. If we're doing an indirect lookup, sometimes it's helpful to dump the Java colon namespace for our JEE applications. You can't use the dump namespace directly, but you can use it indirectly to validate what you think should be happening in your environment. But one of the things here, it's a mapping, again, of sample code to what we see in our web.xml and what we see in our binding XML. So, again, we have here is a code sample. We want to check that our lookup to our resource reference is correct, and in this instance, it's plants by plants DS. Then we would go to our WebXML and ensure that the resource reference is defined correctly and that it maps to the correct data source. From there, we would go look in the binding file and make sure that our resource reference here is created correctly and that it has the right syntax and that JNDI name for the data source is correct, which in this case is plants by WebSphere data source. And then from there, we would map that back to what we see in our dump namespace output to ensure that our indirect way of looking up the object is actually what we think we have. And sometimes we often see that it's just as simple as, you know, I thought I was looking up something on server 2, and I'm actually doing the lookup on server 1. So being able to map these things systematically will help in resolving an issue here. Slide 12, please. The configuration looks to be set up properly then, especially when comparing with the last two things that we've done, mapping from a direct and indirect perspective. Then you may need to get a dump of the applications from the Java colon namespace using the WSAdmin utility. We have a link here for the syntax and examples of how to dump a Java colon namespace. And basically, you go through the same steps that we just outlined before in mapping what you're doing in your code with versus what you see in the output of the WSAdmin utility dumping the Java colon namespace. So now we'll move to slide 13 into our next presenter.
Yes, this is Al Gilchrist, and the question I'm talking about is what are the differences and advantages of doing a direct and an indirect JNDI lookup? Now, if you'll move on to slide number 14, when we're looking at when a direct lookup is done, the actual JNDI name of the resource is looked up. As an example is JDBC My Data Source. And when a direct lookup is done, the actual name of the object needed is hard-coded into the application. The lookup then goes directly to the object needed, and it doesn't look really into the JNDI, really. It just goes directly to the object. Direct lookup also has less steps than indirect lookup to get into the needed object. That is some of the advantages and disadvantages of the same. And then when we have a direct lookup, we note that what you set up in a server and create various things like data sources, EJBs, message queue connection factories, upon configuration of those items, their location is placed into the JNDI. Like when you're doing setting up a data source, it's asking you what, you know, JNDI what is the name of this data source going to be in JNDI for lookup. And the other things are like that also. Also, when the deployer creates an application, they also create a deployment descriptor file that is bundled with the application in the deployment descriptor. There are resource references and basically represent resources needed by the application to function. And also we're wanting to see the annotation section here. I'll talk about that in just a second. At deployment time, the person deploying the app uses the resource references and matches the resource references with the actual resources on the board, onboard the app server, which causes resource reference bindings entries to be placed into the WebXML or EJB jar XML files, which store those reconciled references. Resource references are defined in the deployment descriptor web.xml or ejbjar.xml. Now, note from what I said previously, Annotations can be used instead of having a resource ref in the deployment descriptor. If you use an annotation and a deployment descriptor, then the deployment descriptor does take precedence. I wanted to say that part. So we have advantages and disadvantages for the indirect lookup and the direct lookup. And we're seeing the examples in slide number 14 of what the difference looks like, what they look like, how different they are, and in the code. And resource reference is defined in deployment descriptor, web XML or djbjar.xml, or annotation. Resource reference is binding maps, the resource reference to actual JNDI name or resource. Okay, if you would please move on to slide number 15. Direct JNDI lookup, the advantage are fewer steps in configuration. Disadvantages is application is not portable and must be changed if JNDI name changes. Now, what I said before was that usually in a direct lookup type situation, the actual location of the object that you want to use is hard-coded into the actual code itself. So if you hard-code something into an application and you go to some other server that may have the same resources available, but the resources are named differently than what you have in your application code, you will have to change your application code to be able to look up that resource on a different server. So it's not as portable and would require someone to actually go in and physically change the application code. Indirect JNDI lookup, the advantage, application is portable. If JNDI name changes, only needs to be changed resource reference bindings, and that's done at deployment time and so forth, and so that, you know, saves you a lot of trouble. You can actually bind the resources based on the resource ref in the deployment descriptor. Okay, direct JNDI lookup does not require resource references in deployment descriptor, does not require lookup of resources ref prior to going to needed object, is not portable in that if you deploy on another app server that has different JNDI names for resources, you would have to change the source code to make it work as basically the lookups are hard-coded. Use default values for resources. It would use the default values for the resources. Indirect JNDI lookup does require resource ref in the deployment descriptor and binding in web.xml, etc. It does require lookup of resource ref prior to going to the needed object. And it is portable in that it does not require changing the application code if references are different. And allows one to set up custom properties for use in controlling the objects, such as setting a data source to shared or non-shared. That's very important. We have on many of our objects are like data sources and things, and EJBs even. We have a way to set up custom properties in the files, in the deployment descriptors as we send them over or transfer them from our code and so forth to the actual application server. The custom properties that we set in the deployment descriptor would definitely, you know, transfer over and be bound in the application server itself. So there's a huge advantage, and it is best practice to use indirect lookups rather than direct lookups. That's about all I have on this particular question, so I want to turn it over to the next person going forward with question number 4 on page 16.
Hi, this is Krishna Jaladi. Question 4, how can I resolve EJB3 JNDI lookup failures? Let's move on to slide 17, please. Okay, it is important to understand how EJB container binding EJB3.0 on EJB3.1 application. Basically, the EJB container is responsible for binding any of the resources for an EJB you can use dump namespace tool to see how bindings look like in namespace, but dump namespace most of the times may not provide complete information. For example, if you have only EJB local interface, then possibly your dump namespace will not provide that information. As previously told by my colleague Randall, you should use either dump local namespace, or if you are using indirect lookup for an EJB lookup, you should use dump Java namespace to get the details, because the local name scheme is only available for the containers to bind locally. It's not going to bind through a JNDA name server. That's one reason why you can't get the complete information using dump namespace tool. However, if the containers are binding the namespace globally, definitely you can see the information in the dump namespace tool output. I had shared Info Center URL, which provides total information about EJB 3.1 3.1 application bindings overview. You can use the best practice, use the system out messages, which I am going to show in next slide, to see how EJB container is binding the EJBs to the namespace during the EJB module or the application startup. Can we move to the next slide, 18, please? Yeah. When the application is starting, you will see an EJB module is started by the runtime, and then the EJB container reads the deployment descriptor information or annotation information. Basically, when you deploy an EJB application, if your EJBs are based on 3.x, in case if you don't have any bindings defined, then during the deployment time, deploy process will generate the default bindings to an XML file, which you can also use for debugging purpose. And then the main message that EJB container prints out is CNTR0167I message, which provides how a EJB container is binding different bindings, whether it is a local or remote or no view interface. It also provides you information where exactly it is binding into the namespace. With the J2EE 1.6, there are two, it provides additional capabilities like where you can bind a name into the Java colon global namespace, and then Java app namespace, and the Java module level namespace. Basically, these are all falls under categories of classic bindings. Some of the global, globally binded names will be, you can see from dump namespace output. But this message you can use if you, as a quickly to identify how EJB container is binding and then how your code is looking up. That might give you a quick solution to resolve the issue. Let's go back to slide 19 to continue with the next question.
Thank you, Krishna. So this is Tuan Nguyen, and question number 5 on slide 19. When the size of the namestore.xml file in my environment grows rapidly, causing memory-related issues, how can I safely remove these entries in the file? This is an issue that is not as common as the name.file exception addressed by Dave in question number 1, but I've seen it from time to time, and it can be very severe, you know, memory-related wise. Move on to slide 20, please. So first, what is the namestore.xml? It is a file that you can find under the config /cells/cellname, and it stores the cell scope persistent binding. So when an application does a bind with that is prefixed by a cell/persistent, the binding will get put in this file. Note that noted that these are not the bindings that you can configure using the admin console. Those bindings will go to the name bindings, that XML. And if the bindings that you put in this file, you know, needed by your application is not needed anymore, then you should remove it. And you can, in your application, you can do unbind. I include short examples in bullet number 2 and number 3 there. So back to the question, if the file grows rapidly, chances are that the application put these bindings in this Salesforce persistent partition of the namespace, and more of them are put in there, but they are not removed. It is the responsibility of the application to remove that to avoid running into this problem. And know that you should use unbind instead of editing it by hand. Next slide, please. Slide 21. When the application writes to the self-persistent namespace, the update will propagate from the DMGR to all the managed nodes under the cell, and so that on the application servers in those nodes can have access to that object. In order for the update to take place, it is a requirement that the deployment manager to be up and running, and for the same reason, the update needs to propagate from the DMGR to all the managed nodes to the servers, and for that reason, writing to the self-persistent namespace is expensive, and they are not designed for rapidly changing binding. Back to you, David.
I'd like to thank our panel of experts for answering the questions. At this time, we would like to open the lines for a live question and answer period.
Sir, we have no one queuing up at this time.
Thank you. I do see a question in the group chat, and the question is, are there any performance implications if using indirect lookup compared to direct lookup?
This is David Tyler. To answer that, the performance impact really should be negligible. I mean, there would be a few more lines of code executed for an indirect JNDI lookup, basically to resolve the JNDI name from the resource reference binding. But that shouldn't be significant, and we've never really seen performance issues in PMRs where that was a problem. I would guess it probably takes only a few milliseconds, if that, to resolve, and we feel that the benefits of indirect JNDI lookups really outweigh any small performance impact that might be involved.
Thank you, David. Thanks for participating in the Q&A period. At this time, I would like to advance to slide number 24 and pass the presentation over to Krishna for a summary of today's presentation.
Thank you, David. To summarize for today's technical exchange on Ask Expert JNDI, we had provided a brief introduction to the Java naming and directory interface in WebSphere application server. We had discussed about some of the common issues such as name not found exceptions and how to resolve them. Using the messages provided in the system out logs, and also using the dump namespace utility. And then we also discussed about some common troubleshooting steps, and then we also discussed about the differences between direct and indirect JNDI lookups. We also discussed about some of the how to resolve EJB 3.0 JNDI lookup issues. And we also discussed about the persistent namespace and how it can cause memory leak problems and how to resolve them. We had answered a few questions that we got on phone and on the same time chat. Hope you got something out of this presentation. If you have any further questions, please feel free to send us an email in the slide that David Long has posted so that we can get them answered at our best. Thank you for providing us an opportunity, and I would like to thank on behalf of my team to entire audience to give us an opportunity and share our knowledge with you. Thank you. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Krishna, for the great summary. At this time, we will conclude the Ask the Expert session. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and a sincere thank you to our panel of experts for presenting today.